This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Nick in Vegas to cover the fight. Tyler Scott, nice enough to be joining us for the second day in a row. It's Barry, it's Joel, it's The Usual Suspects till 4. One in the books, two to go, plenty more of the big show. We continue with hour number two. We were talking Texans. News just in from down on Kirby. Kevin Johnson, grade 2 sprained knee, out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeesh.
That means the secondary is now going to be a position of interest because, of course, we know Jonathan Joseph left the game last night with some sort of shoulder injury, still waiting on the medical report on how long he might be out.
Wow. You could be down to what, Kareem Jackson as your best corner?
Yeah, they brought in what, Gilchrist and everybody was kind of makeshift filling in last night.
So you've lost.
Quick J.J. update.
Yep.
Underwent MRI on his injured right shoulder. Injury isn't considered serious. First MRI showed no major damage. He'll have another one on Friday to confirm the diagnosis. So we don't really know exactly what it was. I think it probably was a dislocated shoulder like what we were talking about. But he
sounds
has not,
like,
he, I mean, this was it. This was 10 minutes ago.
So best case, it sounds like best case scenario because you could see.
Well, you have 10 days.
That's where I was going. First things first, you got 10 days for your next game. So you at least buy some time already built in. But it looked like it could have been a lot worse than what he got away with because he was wide open and extended away from – the arm was extended way away from the body when contact was made, and it was a pretty solid hit.
You know, it's funny because the headline last night for Kevin Johnson was on Cron.com from Aaron Wilson. Texans Kevin Johnson, Jonathan Joseph, injuries not considered serious. Now you find out Kevin Johnson could miss 4 to 6 weeks.
That's somewhat serious.
Yeah, Joseph missing, you know – if he misses any time, it'll probably be one game if based on what Tyler just said. So still not that great. You're back down to Joseph and Jackson, and this is year number two where Kevin Johnson has been unable to make a meaningful contribution for what could end up being the majority of the season.
Mm-hmm. And let's be honest. We said this, it was a day or two ago. Since he came back from the broken foot, he hasn't looked like the same player. Because he was known for such great speed along with quick hips, and he was getting beat in that Jacksonville game quite regularly.
Yeah. What this says, though, is, I mean, you could, there's one thing you can't predict in the NFL, and that's it's tough to predict a lot of things, but you certainly can't predict injuries and who's going to get hurt and who's going to stay healthy. And guys that, you know, may have an injury history might be healthy for a year. But when something like this happens, you start to look at what happened in the offseason and not re-signing A.J. Bouye, and then you think, ugh, this is salt in the wound.
And you and I were talking about, hey, you've got to focus on the secondary. That has to be an issue of concern. And they were like, no, we're good. How about this?
I was more offensive line. I'll be honest. I mean, I don't want –
I'm not saying the number one priority, but we said you got to look at guys that were leaving.
I wanted to see them do more with the offensive line. I didn't mind them losing A.J. Bouye at the time, and I didn't mind them losing Quentin Demps. I felt like Demps had he peaked. He had his best year. I don't think he was going to duplicate that. With Bouye, I felt like he was overpaid. I wouldn't have minded them keeping him, but not for what he got paid. I don't think he was worth that. But when you look back at it now – yeah, that hurts. It hurts a lot more. Because I feel like with Joseph and Jackson and Kevin Johnson that they had enough viable players that Bouye or one of the three became expendable and you didn't want to overpay for any of them.
And I'm not trying to regurgitate all that because we went over that time again.
I was
with you that I didn't think Bouye was worth the amount of money he was going to draw. But I was saying, look, regardless of what you don't have to address, you don't have to bring him back. But you got to fill in those roles. You got to fill those pieces because I thought the find of getting Q Demps when you got him and what he brought to the table, you at least had to find a viable couple guys that can give you some depth at the safety position, things like that. So I was with you. Look, we all knew offensive line was going to be the key area you had to focus on. But in terms of the secondary, yes, we talked about it a lot. They had three guys, but we all know, and we're seeing it again right now with the injuries here, you got to have some depth at those positions at the back of the defense.
Yeah, well, they don't anymore.
Speaking of kind of injuries, the Bengals fired their offensive coordinator.
I was getting to that. Yeah, I was going to say, it's one thing if you're dealing about injuries that are going to be out for some time. But if you believe what the Bengals believe, which was they thought they were, one, a playoff team, two, that they had their quarterback of the now and the future, and that, three, their players all thought they lost to the worst team in the NFL. That's how embarrassed they were last night. Ken Zampezi, now out of a job because, as A.J. Green put it, your playmakers have to get the ball in key situations, and they didn't without calling his own number. But with all that being coming to a head and losing your first two games of the year at home and still looking for your first touchdown, Ken Zampezi now on the unemployment line.
Well, this is a case of a player getting a coach fired, because Andy Dalton is hot garbage right now.
I was going to say players, because Green after the game basically put him on the carpet by saying, you got to get me the ball after the game.
To who? To the
He basically he said to the media, in his in his gangbang.
He called out Dalton?
He called out the Bengals and said, without saying, I am your playmaker, he's like, you need to get me the ball. I mean, your playmakers have to get the ball in the last 2 minutes and in final drive of the game, and should be all throughout the game.
While I would agree with him, the one, he had 5 catches for 67 yards. The one for 50, which was basically just thrown up in the air. Again, that ball, it was thrown into what, triple coverage?
There were three.
Yeah, the Dalton, chances I mean, of that getting intercepted is higher than A.J. Green making the catch. So if that goes the way that, you know, the odds would tell you, and it's intercepted, then he has 4 catches for 17 yards. So, I mean, to me, again, that throw right there, though it worked out in their favor, was a bad decision by Andy Dalton to throw into triple coverage.
Yeah, for sure.
This is Andy Dalton's issue.
At the beginning of both of their careers, I mean, Dalton was kind of known for forcing him the ball.
But here's the thing. So it wasn't just one guy. The point is just that those two guys, one, Dalton being garbage, and two, after the game, if you didn't figure it out already, A.J. Green, one, is upset, and two, pointing the finger squarely at their inability to call plays to get him the ball. That basically sets it up to say, yeah, Zampezi doesn't have a job because of their quarterback and their wide receiver. So, I mean, it's...
The guy who replaced him, though, has probably the coolest name ever.
What's his?
He's our quarterbacks coach, Bill Lazor.
If it's pretty, Lazor.
Not as good as Randy Lemon, but you know,
it's close.
All right.
But you, the other one, Barry,
Lazor than Lemon.
You're talking about it in terms of Dalton. The other one too. I think it was the final drive, and it was also the end of the first half, where he's looking square to his left. He's got two receivers in the vicinity, and yet the ball goes over the sideline and ends up at the back of the bench, and even his offensive linemen were looking at him like, what was that?
Well, again, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can call whatever plays you want to call, and A.J. Green can run whatever routes he wants to run. If the quarterback isn't doing his job, you know, that's the reason why the quarterback is the most important position on the field. And I don't know. I don't blame Green. I don't necessarily blame the play calling, although I don't know who, you know, what the hot read is in each one of their calls or whatnot. I just know if you watch that game, you realize what the Bengals' problem is on offense. I don't think it was necessarily even play calling. They threw the ball.
Yeah, I blame Green because he called him out. Because he called him out to the media.
Yeah.
He basically called him out. Because then, to your point, we don't know what's called, but if he's bitching and whining to the media, that basically calls more attention to it. So, yeah, because you're right. We don't know what was called. But, man, I mean, you got to use resources like that. Look, the first game, he didn't use Joe Mixon at all. At least last night, he was in the mix. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that it was, you know, that anybody's going to say that Zampezi didn't get what he deserved. But it's a little early. But, of course, the panic button's being pushed in Cincinnati when you've got all those things that stack up on you. And, by the way, you lost 2 home games. So that doesn't bode well. So we can continue to talk about the Texans. We got the Astros, who, by the way, won last night in a late-night extravaganza, coming home finally after a long road trip. And the Indians, of course, are still winning, which does not help the Astros in terms of getting the best record in the American League. We talk about all those things and a whole lot more. But right now, I want to tell you about the good people over at American Wheel and Tire. They are located at 290 and 34th Street, just outside the Loop. Please go to AmericanWheelandTire.com and see all the great things that they can do for your your automobile, your truck, your SUV, from lift kits to wheels and tires. They have it all under one roof. And not like these big box stores and national tire and wheel places. They're not going to sit there and pull the wool over your eyes, and you come in for a flat tire, and yet you're charged for a new rim and a new tire and a whole lot more, and you're confused and yet strapped for paying a big bill that you didn't expect. They are always going to be honest with you. They have comfortable, luxurious waiting rooms, and they're going to be upfront in terms of what needs to be done, what could be done, and what is the absolute best way to get done what you have to deal with your car. If you need a factory rim or tire, they have it. They also have the custom rims and tires that everybody likes to do to make their car more of an individual look and feel. But I'll tell you what, you can go a lot of different places, but they're right here in your backyard. American Wheel and Tire is always going to do you right. Go see my friends Jason and Johnny, and of course the owners, the Gust family, Mike and Tammy, who have been in business for over 15 years, and they're here to take care of you, the Houstonians, that will be back again and again because they know they'll treat you right. 290 and 34th Street, just outside the Loop. Go to AmericanWheelandTire.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back on The Usual Suspects as we continue to roll on in hour number two of the three-hour extravaganza. We were talking Texans before the break and throughout the entire first hour of the show, and I don't know what you're doing right now.
Just seeing if I could get you.
Man, t-shirt up, belly being rubbed. I'm not sure if that was Al Bundy or what, but you said you had some points you still want to make before
we know that there was like there's like a spotlight over there.
Is there?
Yeah, you're reflecting off
of... Oh, he's talking about your glaringly white belly.
Oh, yeah.
Translucence.
Yeah, oh, sorry I don't go tan and get skin cancer. How stupid of me. Shut up, Tyler.
At least, I don't think his belly...
You're pretty white yourself. You're pretty white yourself.
My stomach isn't as white as yours, though.
But neither one of your stomachs are as white as Brian Barrett's legs, by the way, which Barry and I discovered the other day. Here's a guy that does TV with Sean Salisbury, as well as the network radio side.
Another Syracuse guy.
Yeah, another Syracuse guy, right. And he walked out with us the other day, and Barry and I were both talking because he brought it up. His legs are so white in shorts that they actually glow.
They're pretty clear.
Yeah.
They're close to that. Yeah, I did have just a few things that, like, notes that I made. One, you know, we talked about Cunningham filling in for Cushing, and I thought he had a good game. I thought that's a promising kid. So you see why that they went out and got him in the second round. Clowney's getting a lot of love for that fumble recovery, and everyone's just going nuts for that.
It was all J-Jo, wasn't it? I mean, I'm sorry.
It was
all
Kareem Jackson
all
that made the hit, but the problem is that Clowney was out of position to begin with. That's the only reason he was trailing the play. If you go back and look at the play, he didn't set the edge. He bit on the play fake. They bounced the run outside, and he got burned because of it. So he's trailing the play when the ball gets flown in the air. No one wants to talk about that. Now, granted, when he took off running with the ball, yeah, he looked great, and he looked athletic. But after that happened, I started paying attention. There's several times where he just didn't set the edge for this defense. So I think he's got to do better. And speaking of, could he please stop dropping back in coverage? I don't need to see that anymore. I really don't. And I know someone brought it up last week, and I don't know who it was. I just don't need to see that anymore. Not a thing that I want to see. He should be rushing the passer every chance he gets, and you know, setting the edge when they run the ball. The other thing I was thinking about, you know, we haven't talked about this year really special teams, and usually in years past and even, you know, game to game, we've always talked about how their special team sucks, and I think that just by not bringing it up, there's no glaring mistakes that are being made, tells you that they're playing better. I think they're playing a lot better than they used to, and maybe it's just me. I don't know. You guys tell me. Watt's a little slower, and maybe he's just rusty, but he seems like, you know, he's missed a couple of tackles. Mixon made him miss. He's a step slow, And I think he can get back to it, but he's either rusty or slow or whatever. It just, he's not JJ yet.
I don't know. Tal and I were talking about this. He should get credit for some of the sacks that other guys got last night, though.
That's a good point.
Because one of them, he could show he can still, you know, he does all these things on Twitter about his standing box jumps and stuff. But he got up in the air so high that it froze Dalton. And by the time Dalton knew what he was doing, he was getting sacked by, I think, McKinney. And you're like, whoa. I mean, but we were talking about the fact that first game, yeah, he was slow. This last game, he let a lot of guys break tackles on him. He had guys. Yeah. And he tried the arm tackle, and Mixon and other guys just ran right through him, which normally you would not expect to be the case.
No, and again, it might just be him trying to get back. I mean, he didn't play a lot in the preseason.
Yep.
He missed 13 games last year. So, yeah, I think, you know, if he's still playing like this in week six, then you got to look at it and go, uh-oh, have we seen the best of JJ? You know, is this back injury really going to linger and affect him long term? But I'll give him a couple more games, you know, kind of like we talked about with Keuchel.
Yep.
I'll give him maybe till game five. I want to see the JJ Watt of old in game five.
Now, we were talking about because of the fact that between he and Clowney, they each they accounted for a tackle apiece.
Two solo
and only
tackles
had two solo
last
tackles
week, yeah.
In the first week. So, are you good with where the defense was last night, or are you still saying they're underachieving based on what I expected and what people had in terms of expectations for this defense?
I mean, I kind of expected the whole game to go the way it did, which is why I picked the Texans to win. I feel like
I felt like the
Bengals offensively aren't good, and that this Texans defense would play better than they did against Jacksonville, because they just, I don't think they expected to get their ass whooped like they did against Jacksonville. So I think they came out and wanted to set a tone a lot earlier, and you could tell that, you know, the whole defense just seemed like it had a little more juice to it. Like, it just seemed like every, no pun intended, Brian Cushing, but it just seemed like that they were all more, you know, determined to make a statement, I guess. You know what I mean? And they knew that they were facing a bad offense. So much more of what I expected on both sides of the ball, running the ball more, you know. And even I was a little surprised that last field goal drive on the offensive side of the ball, they kind of spread it out. And you got to see, I mean, even that side of the ball had a little more energy when they started spreading it out in the fourth quarter late when they went up the 13. That might give you an idea of what they're trying to get to. They're just not there yet. But defensively, I thought they played much better. Clowney still makes a lot of mistakes. I still feel like he's young mentally.
Like,
and I don't
know
why.
Because, of course, the knock on him ever since he came into the league was, and even at South Carolina, was he takes plays off. Like, he didn't take the play off where the fumble fell right into his hand.
He just got burned.
Right?
He got beat.
But there's several times where he gives up on plays and just says, okay, if it goes to the other side, I'm going to stop. Luckily, he didn't do that then. But overall, I still think that this defense is capable of so much more. And now what I really fear is, now you're going to have secondary issues going into the game that everybody feared already with Tom Brady and the Patriots. Regardless of what their defense brings or doesn't bring to the table in New England, one thing we do know is he's going to orchestrate drives and he's going to put things together. And if you don't put pressure on Tom Brady, you really have no chance. And this is not what I've expected to see out of those two guys on the end with McKinney in the middle. I will give Cunningham some credit. I liked his activity last night. I liked the fact that in short notice, getting a whole lot more snaps than he was probably scheduled for, I think he did some good things. But I think that overall, this defense obviously isn't even close to what people expected it to be, and now they're going to be faced with injuries.
Well, yeah, that's also the problem on both sides of the ball is the injuries. But yep. I think it's a step in the right direction for the Texans from a team that didn't get any sacks last week, gave up 10. They were able to get 3 sacks this week and only gave up 3. So you can see that they're focused on it. But hell, I mean, they ran, you know, they were running a 12 package and the 22 personnel packages for the majority
of the
night,
game,
which is 2 running backs, 2 tight ends, 1 running back, 2 tight ends. And really, those tight ends were offensive linemen. So there were several instances where there was, what, 7 offensive linemen?
They were loaded in the box, yep. But here's the thing. With all that being said, I have no problem with that because we expected all of that, right? And I love the fact that after first contact, Foreman was really grinding out yards. We talked about that. But the one thing that annoyed me was how many 3rd-and-1 or less than ones did not get because they just jammed it right up the center's behind instead of just, you don't have to go extravagantly, you know, 3 receiver sets or whatever. Stretch it out. Go over the tackle. Try and do a draw. Do something different than that play because it was just like, oh my God, it's so predictable. that the defense is actually stopping you on third and one.
But I don't even know that I mind that.
Oh, I obviously do.
Because, I mean, yeah, you know that they're going to be conservative with the rookie quarterback. You just know that's going to be the case.
I get that.
But when they're out there and you see that they've brought in two tight ends, which are two offensive linemen, and it's third and one, and this was to start the fourth quarter. They go 22 personnel. So they've got two running backs, two tight ends, plus the offensive line. They get beat off the ball, and it ends up being a two-yard loss. It's not the play call. In that instance, that's not the play call. Everybody should be blocked in that case, in that instance, because you bring in the fullback to account for everybody that the Bengals have in the box. You should be able to get a yard with the 22 personnel package, and you can't because your offensive line is so bad. They got blown off the ball. It happened twice in the same series when they had third and one.
Third and one to me, and especially if that doesn't work the first time, even with the personnel like you're talking about, it is the play call, because to me, it's like, okay, if you can't even execute that, then try something else where at least Foreman off of the guard, off the tackle, kind of not going straight north and south, was able to get you a yard, was able to find a crease, was able to get through a hole. But man, that play calling to me was ultra conservative, which I disagree with.
Okay. Well, we'll have to agree to disagree on that. But, I mean, I want to see better from both sides, just like you. I mean, they need to get better, step in the right direction, though. So, all right, we all know Houston was hit hard by Harvey. I mean, that's obvious. And after this city and the devastation that we've suffered and the surrounding areas have suffered, Gulf State Homebuyers believes now is the time for us to come together as a community. And they want to do their part to help the community. So at the team of Gulf State's, they're reaching out and they're saying, look, we want to offer our services to you, and you need to know what those services are. And first of all, you need to know that when you're dealing with Gulf State Homebuyers, you're dealing with a company that last year and this year, 2016, 2017, they won the Distinction Award from the Better Business Bureau. So you know you're in good hands when you're working with Gulf State Homebuyers. And what they want to do is they want to help you make this tough decision, because a lot of you, your homes were flooded, and you're looking at the house and you're thinking, do I spend the time and the money and the go through the trouble of fixing this home up again, only to risk this happening the next time the city floods? Or do I sell it and move on? And you kind of don't know what to do. Call the folks at Gulf State Homebuyers, 281-717-6100. Let them help you, because what they're going to do is they'll come out. They'll give you a free, no-obligation cash offer for your home. Then you can take that along with what it's going to cost you to fix it and decide what's best for me. Do I take the cash and move on and go buy a home that doesn't flood? Or do I fix it up and take my chances again? Let Gulf State Homebuyers help you with that. They're going to be there. They've got an outstanding team of attorneys, title companies, in-house professionals, all of that that can help you make this decision and help you with the process if you do decide to sell it. You don't have to sell it to them, guys, but at least get the right information to help you determine what the next move is for you. They're going to handle everything. They're going to make it as easy as possible for you. No reason not to call them and at least get that free, no-obligation cash offer. Gulf State Homebuyers, 281-717-6100, or visit them on the web, GulfStateHomeBuyers.com. The folks over at Gulf State Homebuyers are there for you, and together we will keep Houston strong.
Happy birthday, ESPN 97.5. We're 10. If you thought we were degenerates before, wait until we hit puberty.
Hold on to your butts.
3-4! 3-4! 3-4! 3-4!
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Bruce awaiting the 2-0 pitch. Here it comes. A swing and a drive to deep right, down the line, base hit, into the corner, around third, coming home, Ramirez. It's a game winner for Jay Bruce, and history marches on.
Hey, the Cleveland Indians did it again last night, coming from behind. As you just heard there, Tyler, was that the Indians radio network or television?
I believe radio.
Cleveland Indians radio network. Compliments for that audio tidbit. This has all the remnants of that game last night. Was Steve Novak in the Rockets race for 22. I was watching it last night.
Yeah.
They get to the ninth with two outs. Nobody on. Oh, no, sorry. One out, one on a questionable 3-2 pitch. And they get a perfect double play ball, but a little slowly hit. So the Royals decide to eat it. And I'm going, okay, two outs, runner on first. Lindor coming up. I'm like, this could go one of two ways. This is the Steve Novak comeback game to save the streak, or this is it's finally over. And then Lindor hits like a opposite field, and I'm like, as soon as he hit it, I went, uh-oh. Because you could just tell by the sound of the bat. And then I believe that it was Gordon in left field. Looked like he got his glove on it, but just the tip of it. It goes off the wall, and I went, oh, it's over. And Lisa's mom's like, no, we're going to extra innings. I go, it doesn't matter. When a team comes back with two outs in the ninth after winning 21 in a row, it's over. And then Bruce does it the very next inning, and I'm like, oh, my God.
No surprise they did it off of Herrera in the ninth. He is not having a good year.
And they've gotten to him before.
Yeah.
He gave up back-to-backs to Encarnacion and Lindor earlier in the season, so they already knew that they could get to him. But, I mean, he throws hard, but he throws it right down the center sometimes. Yeah.
You could throw hard all you want, but if it's straight,
yeah.
Big league hitters are going to hit a straight pitch. I don't care how fast you throw it.
And this is my focus, I guess, but I keep saying that I keep wanting the Astros to stay on their heels. I just felt like the Astros were going to win last night. You know, Cleveland loses. Hey, it's only 1.5. They're still in it. And then, you know, the Royals are still in town this weekend for the Indians, so at least they're not playing anybody that's like, minor league type baseball players like they have played with the Tigers in the past. So I thought maybe there was a chance for the Astros to gain ground, but instead, luckily the Astros won. But oh man, that was, to me, I was like, oh man, they're not catching Cleveland now.
Did you see, I retweeted it last night, RJ Bell put out, if you bet $100 at the beginning of the streak
and kept betting again, kept
and
doubling it,
kept letting it ride, you would end up with $1,872,000.
How many people are going to do
that? Nobody
would
have. Nobody would have done that.
Pull
but
out,
that's
right?
Just no. One of those fun little.
Yeah, but that's like press your luck, and at a certain point, yeah. If you keep pulling it out, you're like, okay, I'm bailing now because at some point this thing's coming to an end.
I mean, I think they were favored in all but three of those games. So,
and you know who? No one loves this win more last night than one of Terry Francona's best friends. I don't know if you saw this, but he's like, he calls him Mr. Bad Luck. And like in the past, every time that he's actually taken a call from this guy when things have been going well, including when he was with the Red Sox, when all of a sudden the beer and chicken and all the crap and the clubhouse went loose and he lost his job. He's like, well, the one guy I'm not talking to, he's only allowed to text me, is Mr. Bad Luck. Because he knows who he is, but I know he's going to screw this streak up. Yesterday, he actually picked up the phone and talked to the guy. So with two outs in the ninth, you know, Mr. Bad Luck has got the grapes up in the intestines going, oh, no, it's me again. And then they luckily pulled it out. But, man, that's one hell of a streak. So now.
Well, in your hopes of the Astros catching Cleveland.
Go ahead. Burst my bubble.
It shapes up like this. Cleveland's got three left with the Royals this weekend.
I like.
Then they're on the road in Los Angeles to face the Angels. Then they go up the coast to face the Mariners in Seattle.
Okay.
Then they're at home for the Twins and finish it off with a three-game series at home against the White Sox. So you've got Angels, Mariners, Twins, White Sox. Two of those teams wild card contenders. Yeah. Two of those teams not. The Astros go up to Seattle to face the Mariners starting tonight.
No, they play at home against
Seattle. I'm sorry. They're at home against Seattle tonight.
Yep.
And this weekend, and then the White Sox come to town for three, mm-hmm. and then the Angels. Mm-hmm. But the difference is the Astros finish on the road against two teams they don't want to face. One, the Rangers, who give them fits no matter what.
And would love nothing better than to ruin it.
Yeah, and then they have to face Boston on the road in a four-game series. Here's the deal, though. This is what you might see play out here. Once the Astros clinch, all right. Once they clinch, which is if it's this weekend, if it
should be
early next week. Once because, like I said, Cleveland after this Kansas City Kansas City Royals this weekend, they're going to play the Angels and probably beat them 2 out of 3 at least. I mean, if the streak is over by then. And the Angels, vice versa, will be playing the White Sox about the same time. So I think during the White Sox series is when you'll see this definitely end and be over for them. That series against Boston probably won't mean anything because by then you're probably not catching the Indians. So what you're doing then is you're setting up your pitching matchups to face Boston again in the playoffs.
Right.
Which is essentially is going to happen. Cleveland's going to get the wild card team when they win the AL. So the Astros are going to face Boston in a 4-game series to end the season and then turn right back around and face them again.
Yep.
In the playoffs, you almost want to be out. You almost don't want to have a chance to win the AL at that point so that you don't have to run you can basically set up your matchups at that point.
And they can keep it close. Look, the Angels, I mean, in terms of the division, that should be over this weekend because the Angels are playing the Rangers. And the Rangers are still playing good enough baseball. They're still delusional enough to think that they have an outside shot. So, and Bud Norris is pitching tonight for the Angels. So, you know, I wouldn't even worry. I'm not even thinking about the division. But I'm just trying to keep it within a game, game and a half, so that one series that you hope that they can finally capitalize on being the Astros when you're playing the White Sox next week. But good Lord knows that they got swept in Chicago by the White Sox. Lord knows when they came to that series in Oakland that they were supposed to dominate against the team with the, what is it, worst or second worst between the two teams in American League, and they swept them. That you can't even think about the fact that the Astros are worried about matchups because when they play the worst teams in baseball, they get swept.
Well, here's the thing to keep an eye on, though. There's the Red Sox are 3 games up on the Yankees. In that division. So the Red Sox need to win. Otherwise, they're going to have to play, you know, a wild card game and then face Cleveland. So they're 3 up on the Yankees, and they don't play the Yankees. So they're not, they don't have that opportunity. So they play the Rays, which is not a bad baseball team at all. They play the Orioles, not a bad baseball team at all. They play the Reds, not a good baseball team. Then they play the Blue Jays, and then they finish up with the Astros. So by the time the Astros series rolls around, there's no telling what could happen because the Yankees, they've got the Orioles, the Twins, the Blue Jays, the Royals, the Rays, and then the Blue Jays again. So not the most difficult schedule in the world, but that's the thing to watch. Watch that Red Sox and Yankees race and see what happens division. Over the next couple of series in the division. Because if the Red Sox can coast, then they also don't have to do it. And now you're set up. Now they're going to be setting up their rotation as well to face the Astros. So that could be, I think that's kind of the game within the game to watch over the next couple of weeks and see how this all shakes out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Now, David Price back for the Red Sox, see if he factors into the playoff picture for the Red Sox. They're going to put him in the bullpen for the rest of the regular season. And we all know that his playoff track record is not good. So you might dodge one there and keep him in the bullpen instead of being a starter if you're the Astros. You don't want to see too much Chris Sale.
Well,
to your point.
Here's what's funny is I was just looking at the pitching. Mm-hmm. So Sale goes the 26th against the Blue Jays, which means he wouldn't be scheduled to pitch again until October 1st, the last game of the season. You think you're seeing Chris Sale October 1st in the last game
chance.
Of the season?
Nope.
So, yeah, they've got right now the projected starters against the Astros, that last series, Red Sox-Astro series, Rodriguez versus Morton, Fister versus Keuchel, Pomeranz versus Verlander, and it's open for October.
I don't think you see Keuchel or Verlander.
I would be surprised if you see Keuchel or Verlander against the Red Sox if everything has been decided by
them. The Red Sox haven't seen a whole lot of Charlie Morton over his career, so I'm not sure that you want to show him off to them either.
Yeah. Run old Fires back out there.
And by the way, before we get to anything else, last bit of baseball news for the Red Sox getting back at David Price. Astros lose Jay Mariznick 6 to 8 weeks. Needs surgery on a thumb. Unfortunately, that probably means the end of his season. And if that's the case, thank God you got Cameron Mabin.
I was about to say, I mean, you know, we talk about with the Texans losing A.J. Bouye and then you have those injuries. It's almost the reverse for the Astros where they've gone out and added Mabin. And you look at it and go, really? Another center fielder on this team? But then you lose Jake Mariznick, your defensive replacement that you would be relying on in the playoffs. Well, thank God you went and got Cameron Mabin to be that guy as well.
And he can be your pinch runner.
And Fires is out 5 games. He got suspended for retaliating against Luis Valbuena after Valbuena had a majestic bat flip after taking Fires deep in the first inning of that game.
Anybody see it? Because I didn't go and watch the Texans. No. Last night he said he threatened after Fires went after him that if I hit another one, wait till you see what I'm going to do next. He hit one last night, and I did not see anywhere, and I was looking for it to see if he tried to do it again.
I think it would have been off of Fires he meant. And probably not the Astros.
I think he just said that he was mad about the fact that the Astros took exception to the fact that he bat flipped.
I think fires probably more than the Astros, but he might be lumping.
You don't have any pull with the American League or the commissioner? Can't you just suspend fires for the rest of the year? Because that's what's going to happen anyway.
Please. Jeez. Please suspend them. All right, guys. I want to right now, I want to save you some money by telling you about Energy Ogre, because everybody knows we're getting into the dog days of summer. We're getting out of the dog days of summer, and you're about to get that September, that August-September electric bill, and you're going to be in for sticker shock. But you wouldn't be if you were with Energy Ogre, because Energy Ogre, that's their job. They save you money. They're not an electric company. They're a software company. They're a technology company. What they do is they shop your rates and find you the best deal, find you the best electricity provider based on how you use electricity. It's a great thing that they have going over there. I've been a member with them since January, and this year already, through August, I've saved $642. $642 since joining Energy Ogre in January. I'll give you an example. My August bill last year, $281. This year, with Energy Ogre going out and getting me my electric service, $132. I saved $150 in August just by being with Energy Ogre. Why aren't you signing up? I don't get it. Most of their members save between 40 and 60% each month. Last year, $21 million is the total amount they saved their customers. I'm glad I did it. You'll be glad you did it. The best thing is no hidden charges, no hassles, no catch. If you're not happy, you cancel anytime. They don't care. I went to Energy Ogre about February and said, you guys have got to let me talk about you on the radio. People need to know about this. And here I am now, and I want you to go sign up. EnergyOgre.com is where you can go and sign up. They've got a calculator. You enter your usage. They can give you an estimate of how much you save. No reason not to go do it, guys. EnergyOgre.com. And I tell you what, I'll save you 10 more bucks. Use promo code Barry. You'll get your 13th month free. EnergyOgre.com, promo code Barry. Go save money.
ESPN 97.5.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me. Yeah.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, we're back on The Usual Suspects. Two in the books, one to go. Plenty more of the big shows. We continue to roll on. We've covered a lot of ground, Mr. Laminack.
We have.
We've covered Astros. We've covered Texans. We've covered Charlie, which is tough because for a small man, he has a lot to cover.
You know one thing we haven't done?
What's that?
Text or tweets from our fair listeners.
Yes, I know. I was busy catching up in the break.
Yeah, and you know, it never fails where I'll get one hate text or tweet at least a day. And my boy Tate out there, who I have no idea who Tate is, but obviously listening. And I thanked him for his input. But, you know, when we were talking about, the yards and everything, joking about me having my own show.
Yep.
He tweeted to me and said, Barry, we don't care, Barry. This isn't your lawn spot. This is sports.
How long you been listening, Tate?
Thanks, Tate.
Yeah.
Appreciate your feedback, buddy. I mean,
we
you
mix
know,
it up around here.
I don't know if you know this, but the E in ESPN stands for entertainment. And that's what we're trying to do for you, homie. We're going to give you the sports. But we also are going to give you some entertainment. So just
that's why our callers don't go sports every time they call in. just an FYI.
Yeah. Your friendly neighborhood beer salesman said, hell yes, it's definitely a WTF Friday. Thank God y'all are on the air. Yeah, and Greg, or not Greg, but the Kilted Beer Guy,
yeah,
got some speakers, he said. Yeah. So he's finally able to listen again. Well, welcome back, homie. Welcome back indeed. Barry, we all hate how your voice sounds. That was from All Texting, No Tweeting. That was from earlier when we were talking with Charlie.
He, and they're loyal, and I love them, but he and OU Mike, just part of their whole mantra every day is to just try and bust our chops.
All Texting, No Tweeting, yeah. I met him at Trailer Will and Frame, I believe, when we were out there once. And, yeah, he was even...
I met him, too.
Even face-to-face, he was giving me the business. So good for him, though. At least he did it face-to-face, unlike a lot of people who won't come up to us and say anything.
I like our guys that take up all the bandwidth at work, listening to us and getting everybody else listening.
At Benny Keith. Yeah. Somebody said, guys, we know that the Texans are going to lose to the Pats, but will they beat the Titans? Don't count on it. That Titans team is a good football team.
Yeah, don't sleep on Tennessee.
Nope.
Like Tennessee on
the road.
I have won
in the division.
Tennessee on the road at Jacksonville, and everybody's like, oh, Jacksonville beat the Texans. They're hot. Well, you better be real hot because Tennessee's going to come in. They're going to smash it down your throat. Their defense is better because of the improvements that they made. And Mariota's no slouch.
Nope. Let's see. Who would win in a fight to the death between Palillo and Randy Lemon? I'm going to go Randy Lemon.
I'm going Randy Lemon, too.
He's got the weight difference. Plus he's much bigger.
Plus, he can bring the hoe when he needs it.
He fights you with hoes?
He can bring the garden hoe when he needs
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the shears.
Right.
The garden hedge shears. Clippers.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Palillo's just not a big dude. Just not a guy that, I don't know, in a fight, he might be quicker than you, but he's just going to pepper you. You know what I mean? Like, nothing's going to really have any damage. He might outpoint you, but in a street fight or a fight to the death, that's not helping.
No. When you still wear a child's medium, you can't expect to be considered an enforcer.
Is that why he had a lion on his shirt and a lion on his shorts? They're granimals? Is that what that was? I'll be damned.
Dude, Tyler, the best thing that could happen in that kind of street fight is Randy Lemon brings the hedge clippers and Charlie's eyebrows get in the way and they become neat and trimmed.
Who wins in a fight, Barry Warner or Charlie Palillo?
I think just by pure size.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Warner.
He's what old, about, though. He's old and slow.
What about one Barry Warner-sized Charlie Palillo?
Oh.
Or 10 Charlie Palillo-sized Barry Warners?
Well, that's not even fair. 10 Barry, Charlie, 10, wait, what's, what? I feel like I just got drunk in 2 seconds.
Yeah,
say it again.
Have. One Barry Warner-sized Charlie Palillo.
Okay.
Or 10, we'll drop down to 5. We'll do 5. Charlie Palillo size Barry Warners.
I'll take the one
so five
Barry
mini
Warner
Barry
size,
Warners
yeah.
versus one big.
Charlie I'll take Palillo. The one Barry Warner size Charlie Palillo because Charlie is a tactical
he's
fighter.
Smarter, yeah.
And if you give him some size, he's dangerous.
Yeah.
So I'll take that for sure.
Why do I feel like I just applied for a job at IBM? It sounds like one of those story yeah. problems.
Can you guys bring in the entire Astros roster one by one so they get their mojo back? Yeah, I know. They need some usual suspects good luck for sure. Enjoying the day off with the wife who's listening for the first time. Hey, welcome. Thank
welcome,
you.
Welcome, wife.
And she says, Barry sounds hot.
Well, you got that wrong.
And then he said, wait till she Googles you. Yeah. Yeah, don't let her do that. Let her keep thinking I sound hot. That's fine by me.
He's Jewish and black, too.
Yeah, I'm the Sammy Davis Jr. of Sports Talk Radio. That's right.
You can make the sun rise.
Do you guys think my Bengals will finish above 500 for the season?
No.
No, PJ.
No
I really
chance.
Don't.
Not a chance.
If you're firing your offensive coordinator in game number 2 and you've scored a grand total of 9 points in 2 home games, no. Your chances of you going 500, not good.
I agree.
Sorry.
I don't do that much, but I agree.
Trill Phillip wants to know if I'm going to be at the game to buy me a beer. Not happening, Trill. Sorry, man. I was going to try to get out there tonight, but I've got 3 weeks of gigs over the week, next 3 weekends. 2 of them I'll be on the road, so I've got to spend some quality time with the missus this weekend.
Talking about the Astros game?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was telling my Michael he's going to buy me a beer at the game, but I might go Sunday after game day. I'm not sure yet.
By the way, talk about a hellacious schedule for your Astros. They got in at about 7:15 in the morning this morning. They play tonight. They play tomorrow.
Yeah.
That ain't pretty. But they got to keep winning. All right, so we've got 2 in the books, 1 to go, the big show. 1 hour left to get your shenanigans out of the way and talk about some sports and stuff, because we do entertain as well as talk sports, in case you missed it. So give us a call, 713-780-3776, HRNP, listener line. You can call, you can text, you can hit us on Twitter. Back with a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere, ESPN 97.5.
Can only mean one thing. I know when that hotline blinked.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.